to another episode of Quantum of Solace with David Robertson and Al Smith of the Solace Centre for Public Christianity. Looking at the world, I agree. What fools we mortals be. Morality is in demise. Morality is on the rise. I said the world is spinning around. I said the world is upside down. I said the world is spinning around.
You ever had pneumonia?
For some reason, I'm struck by a Billy Connolly song. If you didn't have your wellies, where would you be? Oh no, that's pleurisy. That's different. That's pleurisy. Not pneumonia. That's pleurisy.
Pneumonia. Yeah. Well, Hillary Clinton, in what for her was a bit of a disaster, was filmed collapsing, leaving the 9/11 memorial and collapsed going into her car. She's been off the campaign trail for a couple of days. Donald Trump, uncharacteristically, has been largely silent, knowing full well that just that image alone is a real boost to his campaign.
Tim Stanley had an interesting article in The Telegraph about it. I think it was that her biggest problem wasn't the collapse or the illness, but it's the lying and the covering up about it before.
Yeah, although that's a fairly limited thing to be saying. Obviously, we hope that she gets better. The lesson I take from this from a Christian point of view is that we place so much trust in individual people, and one minute they can be here, the next minute they can be gone. And speaking of that, farewell to our beloved Prime Minister.
David Cameron has announced he's going to be resigning as the MP for Witney in Oxfordshire.
Now, I know that there are people who say, oh, what a wonderful Prime Minister he was. I personally think he was the worst Prime Minister we've had in a century.
He's got to have a job lined up.
Well, he's 49 years old, and former politicians over the past 20 years, thanks to Tony Blair and Gordon Brown,
they make a fortune circuit.
They go on boards of companies. They do all that kind of stuff. So I think the thing that disappointed me about his resignation, he kept making these promises. So on BBC Radio Oxford last year, he said that he would be resigning as leader, but no matter what happened, he would continue as MP because he loved doing that. He said after the EU referendum, of course, he would stay on and initiate Article 50 and all that. Yeah, that's all gone. I mean, there seems to me to be something wrong with people making so many promises and not fulfilling any of them, really. I guess ill health and dishonesty amongst politicians, that's something that we have to mourn about. For me, the jury's very much still out on Theresa May, how she's going to turn out.
Well, it looks like she's just approved the funding for Hinkley Point C nuclear power station that's going to cost an absolute fortune, something we mentioned a couple of months ago on the podcast, and doesn't look like she's stood up to the Chinese yet.
Nicola Sturgeon is widely recognised as a very, very good leader and politician. Ruth Davidson for the Tories in Scotland is getting very high approval ratings amongst the public. And again, we'll see how all of that turns out.
Both Davidson and Sturgeon get approval ratings above 50% by the public in the recent Ipsos Mori survey for STV News.
But I'm just reminded of the saying, trust not in princes or princesses. We have to have gender balance here, remember?
There was a very sad interview on the Colkey radio programme just last week there.
Now, on some mornings, 17-year-old Becca Howie wakes up feeling female, and on other days she feels male. So she might wear a dress and makeup one day and a hoodie and jeans the next. So Becca is gender fluid, that's the term, one of a growing movement of people who refuse to fit into this binary model of male and female. And I'm going to say she joins me now, but I know that I'm going wrong immediately, Becca, so I do apologise for that. You can sort me out of my language soon. Right, Becca, this term gender fluid is quite impersonal, isn't it? You know, it's a real label. So you tell me, from your point of view, what does it mean for you to sort of sometimes feel like a girl and sometimes like a boy?
What do you mean, like, when I feel like a girl? I feel more feminine and more girly and stuff like that with my personality.
Right, so it's not just about clothing then?
No, it's not about just clothing. It's not about the... Because obviously I'm still gay, but I try and show my inside by wearing clothes. But I do feel, like, female sometimes, like... And sometimes I feel male where I want to, like, have male parts and stuff like that, but it's just...
The overwhelming feeling of hearing that young girl talk was just sadness at the level of confusion that exists now.
Yeah, you know, the people talk about transphobia, fear of whatever.
What I felt with this... When I listened to this program, was just an immense sorrow. So what are you going to call it? Trans-triste or something.
In our culture, what people do say, if it doesn't do any harm. When I listened to this 17-minute interview, I think I realized the immense amount of harm that this is doing.
The ideology.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, you listen to her and her pal and you just think, oh my goodness, you poor girl. You're so messed up. So confused. She self-identifies as gay. She goes along to a gay pride rally. She wants to be male sometimes. She wants to be female other times. And they give her a word for it. So they say she's gender fluid. And that suddenly becomes her identity and she picks up on it.
So when did you first become aware of that?
When I was 13, 14, when I went to Pride with some friends. I went there and they said... this word gender fluid, and then they told me what it meant, and then I kind of fit in with me because I kind of felt with that. So, yeah.
So, at that age, you kind of were not, I don't mean given a label, but you know, you had a discussion with somebody and you thought, all right, okay, this fits with how I'm feeling. Yeah. So, up until that point, how were you feeling? Did you feel I am a girl? Were you feeling confusion?
I thought I was transgender at once, but then I thought, no, I don't want to be, I'm not transgender. So I had to find another kind of word to kind of describe myself. So I found gender fluid, and then I was like, right, okay.
Now, I think the issue here, and if you go much, much broader picture, and I think people need to do this, in all these issues is you are whatever you want to be, whatever you think. Now, the trouble is that this poor girl is thinking that she's choosing this independently. No, she's not.
No, she's not.
She's at a pride rally and she's being fed this. She's being fed this at school.
There was an interesting quote in Glenn Harrison's article in the Solace magazine. Let me read this to you. Yeah. It says, in a manipulative consumerist culture, which we're in, far from being the architects of our own destiny, maybe the idea of inventing ourselves is simply something that we have been sold.
Yes.
And the real driver is not the individual at all. The result is an increasing sense of fragmentation and instability of the self. That is what this girl Rebecca is describing about herself. It's the increasing sense of fragmentation of her identity.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I think is happening here. It's like you say, this doesn't do any harm and people feel happier doing this, or they say this is their identity. I'm talking about anything that goes against what God tells us in terms of who we are as human beings. In the beginning, God made them male and female. As I cycled here today, that phrase is going round and round and round in my head. In the beginning, God made them male and female. In the beginning, God made them. And I'm finding when I'm discussing this with people that less and less people are able to say, how many genders are there? How many sexualities are there? The harm we are doing here is we are absolutely creating a nightmare for our children.
We're seeing mental health problems are rising across all sectors, across the whole land. Depression is rising, particularly in the younger generation. There's a huge amount of confusion around the issue of sexuality, gender. It just speaks of a search for significance. And what's tragic is that there's no understanding or awareness of the significance comes because of who made us. We are significant because we are image bearers of God. We are made in his image and likeness. When we sin against God, when we reject or we ignore him in the world that he has created, when we rebel against him by living our lives without reference to him, when we fail to be and do what his law requires, it always results in our own harm. And the reality is that unless God shows mercy and reveals himself again, then there's no way back from this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll have to be. This is the Tower of Babel stuff. We'll destroy ourselves. Yeah. But this is where we're going. I mean, sadly, some Christians go along with this, and we'll come onto this in a minute, but it's like saying to somebody, that heroin that you're about to take
if it makes
will
you
make
happy,
you feel really good.
Yeah.
You know, you will have such a buzz out of it. And you're not seeing the wider harm. Just listen to this interview. And I'm sorry, if you do not feel sorrow, and perhaps even a little bit of anger. For me, I don't feel anger at the girl at all. I feel anger at the society, including Kay Adams, just going along with this.
Yeah. The argument that always comes back at us is unless you're prepared to 100% support these people in their own decisions, you're basically bullying them. You're the cause of why we're seeing an increase in the number of teenagers wanting to commit suicide.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically a form of homophobic bullying, transphobic bullying, biphobic bullying.
Okay, let me offer a question here that just for people to think about, because this thought did occur to me and I probably need to think about it a wee bit more. I was sent something from Peter Tatchell talking about how, I think in California, they've just passed a thing about trans, biphobic, homosexual, preventing of suicide. Apparently something like 49% of sexually active homosexuals, teenagers, contemplate suicide or various other things. Now, here's my thought. I know that the simplistic equation is that's because they're not accepted, that's because they're bullied, that's because... And
yeah.
Which, A, I very much doubt in California, but anyway, even supposing that was true of some, and it would be horrendous if it were, who says that's true of everybody? And what if we operate slightly different way? We don't presuppose that anyone who has suicidal thoughts or is depressed because they're homosexual or is because of the bullying and the stigma that goes along with it. Let's do it the other way. What if the actual state of being homosexual is a contributory factor towards it?
Instantly, people are going to scream at their iPhones or however they're listening to this podcast. You can't say something like that in today's society. You're just
well, you can
homophobic.
If it's true. You can if it's true. And what I'm saying is this. I mean, again, I'm not going to do the reverse simplicity and say, if you are homosexual, then you're much more likely to be depressed. Actually, that is true. But it's the why.
Yes.
It's the why. Now, I accept that stigma and bullying and so on may be contributing factors in some areas. But what if there are other factors? And that's the key question. Why do we need specialist health services for homosexual people? Are there more health risks involved with being homosexual? And if that's the case, when people go, what's the harm? They've just answered their own question.
Well, how do we get some facts and figures on this? That would be something that maybe the Scottish Government should be doing investigating and saying, well, look, what are the figures in the Scottish NHS involved with treating of people who are homosexual?
Well, I think we should ask for research, but you're not going to get that. Instead, you're going to get the kind of research, inverted commas, that came from the Thai campaign that was presented on the BBC and involved interviewing 343 self-identifying people at a Pride rally, as well as on the internet, who then all said, you know, 67% had experienced homophobic bullying. And this is put down as quality research. The BBC puts it out. The government's pressurized to give more money. Our kids are going to be indoctrinated.
It's a self-fulfilling propaganda circle. The government's basically paying someone to tell them what to do.
Child, victim of political pride, plant the seed, territorial greed, mind the war, child, we should mind the war, child.
We keep coming back to this.
Yeah, but I mean, these are the issues that keep coming up within the media.
Yeah. Yeah, and not just in the media. I mean, in the secular media, but also in the Christian media. Yeah, have you heard of Cranmer? Archbishop Cranmer?
Yeah, it's one of the top Christian blogs that's really coming from the Anglican mainstream community. So these would be conservative, Bible-believing Christians.
Yeah, I think it's probably the number one Christian blog in Britain. Cranmer has got himself in a bit of bother.
What's he done?
Well, he critiqued Vicky Beeching. Now, Vicky Beeching is an evangelical songwriter, Christian music artist who came out as gay and has suddenly become the darling of Pink News, The Guardian, the BBC, and so on. She wrote an article in The Guardian critiquing the bishop who came out as gay but said he was being celibate and so on. Cranmer,
looking to live a lifestyle in accordance with the teachings of the Bible. Yeah.
Cranmer wrote an article in which he said that He didn't want to personally attack her, and people shouldn't do that. She already had enough of that. But he wanted to disagree with her stance on Anglicanism and the Bible and so on. And he did. Initially, when I read it, because I'd heard about it, I thought it would be really, really strong. Well, in that case, I feel I'm in real trouble because I thought it was really mild.
It was quite a gracious article, really.
Yeah, you can go and read it for yourself.
Yeah, we'll link
see.
To it on the blog if you go to solace-cbc.org.
But what was really astonishing was that an evangelical Anglican, Jane Ozan, tweeted to him, "I have just reported your blog and its contents to the police. You're right, there is lots of hate around today constituting hate crimes."
Oh, goodness me. So I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm not going to come back and argue with you. I'm just going to bring in the external authorities and report you to the police.
Yeah, it's a hate crime. Yeah. It is a hate crime to teach the Bible's teaching on marriage, homosexuality. That's a hate crime. And this is a supposedly evangelical Christian reporting another Christian to the police for hate crime, for holding to what the Roman Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, and the Protestant Church throughout the ages has held to be the Christian view of marriage. Yeah. It's a hate crime.
Oh, well, Jesus must be so delighted that these people have come along now and finally, after 2,000 years, they've come up with the right interpretation of the Bible.
Indeed. Grammar schools. What is a grammar school, Al?
Do you know what? I don't know enough about them. Grammar schools, they're part of the English school system in England and Wales. It's a school that's allowed to select pupils by ability. So it's a way of creaming off the best pupils of an area and hothousing them.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Is that a fair description?
I think grammar schools, basically, the good thing about grammar schools was that they allowed bright pupils from working class backgrounds to basically get a high quality education and be advanced. Now, the bad thing about them was, of course, that you sat in 11 plus, and at 11 years old, your future was decided.
Yeah.
They haven't been completely abolished. There are still grammar schools in Northern Ireland and quite a lot in England, but no new ones were being put.
Theresa May's come in and she's going to announce...
No. She wants to change it. I doubt she'll get it. There are enough Tories who'll be opposed to it. But I don't think grammar schools probably are the answer. However, there is one thing that really, really bothers me about this. MPs in Parliament talking about equality and fair opportunity for everyone and therefore not wanting grammar schools, which have particularly benefited bright pupils from working class backgrounds. They're saying everyone should have the same education, and yet the majority have either gone to grammar school themselves or more likely private school.
Mm-hmm.
In the name of equality, you're going to get these Etonians saying, oh, well, we can't have this because we want equality of opportunity. If they're really, really going to do that, and I'm not advocating this, they would have to abolish private schools. So Eton, that would be half the cabinet gone. Although they talk about improving state education for everyone, they won't. You're going to get people who are paying 25 grand a year to send their kids to the poshest school, or more likely having been able to buy a house at £100,000 extra in an area beside a good state school.
Whatever the system is, humans will always try and take advantage of it to their own benefit. It's human nature, isn't it, to want to do the best for your children? You see it everywhere. You see it in China, where parents are hothousing their kids and sending them to chief executive classes when they're toddlers.
At the Leiderdao School in Guangzhou, a twice-weekly course teaches children as young as three leadership abilities at a cost of £5,700 a year.
Wow.
The Shenyang Early Education Centre is targeting even younger pupils. It offers a management trainee program for babies aged up to 6 months.
But I mean,
aged up to.
To me, where that's going wrong, it's a very mechanistic view of children and education. You're programming your child from day one, irrespective of the child's talents and abilities and what they'll find they're passionate about in life, you know?
Absolutely. Let's stick with the education one, because I want to read a statement from the Scottish Government, its vision for the education of our children. Scotland should be the best place to learn. We want each child to enjoy an education that encourages them to be the most successful they can be and provides them with a full passport to future opportunity. Can I offer a very brief critique of that?
Well, that's meaningless waffle.
Yeah, well, for a start, it's really bad grammar. Scottish Government, you need to be the best you can be. There's a sloppy clash between singular, each child, and plural, the ugly repetition of them as well as the appearance of they.
That's government newspeak, if you like. But they want them to be the most successful they can be. Here's the problem.
Who defines success?
How do you measure it? Exactly. How do you measure it? The best place to learn in the UK, in Europe, in the world? I mean, what does that mean? That is meaningless.
Yeah.
It's absolutely meaningless. I was going to commend it and say, what a great idea, but then I thought, yeah, that's meaningless. It doesn't actually mean anything. And
it sounds good.
Yeah. I just think we as Christians, we've got to think a lot more about education and to be more involved.
All people of Scatland are very childlike. They have had happy, complete childhoods. They were all allowed to develop their imaginations to the fullest. There is only love and happiness in Scatland. Hatred and resentment, well, that's unheard of. It's unheard of.
The Humanist Society Scotland have got a campaign going. They're taking a court action, actually. Gordon McRae from the Humanists is looking for children over the age of 16 to be able to opt out of religious observance.
Yeah, now this is an interesting one because what the Humanists are doing is very clever because, in actual fact, I think most of us could agree, 16 to 18-year-olds should be free to decide if they want to go to a religious observance thing or not without having to get their parents' permission.
Uh-huh.
Fair enough. Because as the Humanists point out and as numerous newspaper editors and columnists have pointed out, we should respect the rights of the children to think for themselves and so on. Okay, let me ask this. What if I, as a 16-year-old, decide I don't want to go to the latest LGBTI tie campaign class? I think for myself. I don't want to be indoctrinated in that way. Are the Humanists going to argue for that?
I don't know. Let's ask them. Get in touch. You can email us at quantum@solace-cpc.org.
Maybe just a couple more things. One anniversary is the tank. 100 years ago, I think pretty well this month, the tanks were first introduced.
It was the First World War?
It was the Battle of Somme.
Yeah.
And it was the British who did it. And
it was a huge thing, if I remember correctly. The track went round the whole vehicle, didn't they? It was a massive thing.
Yeah. Apparently the German soldiers ran away at the first sight of seeing them. They travelled at 2 miles an hour, which wasn't exactly very fast. What I find interesting about that is, you know, human beings can always find new ways to kill each other.
Absolutely.
You know, and of course, then the Germans develop tanks, then you go to the Second World War and you've got Panzerblitz. What is interesting is that most armies in the world were greatly reducing or removing altogether heavy tanks until recently, and they've made a comeback. And do you know why they've made a comeback?
I would presume it's to do with the current threats that we've got. So, for example, they would be good for surviving the attacks of improvised explosive devices.
Initially, they were being removed because people thought, you know, cyber war, terrorism war, there's not going to be great tank battles anymore. But because of road devices, IEDs, they're actually superb for transporting.
And that was one of the big criticisms of the British funding of the war in Iraq. They didn't have enough armoured vehicles to deal with IEDs.
Yeah, so I don't know if we celebrate it, but we'd certainly say that tanks are 100 years old. One thing I do want to celebrate, though, and that is somebody who died a couple of weeks ago, a man called Donald A. Henderson.
He's got to be Scottish with a name like that.
Well, probably background.
I don't know who he is. Who's
smallpox. In the 20th century alone, it killed 300 million people.
Wow.
It's reckoned that after the First World War, killed more people in the years immediately after the First World War than the whole of the First World War. It's a huge, huge disease. In 1966, Donald Henderson, who's an American, was appointed to lead a World Health Organization campaign to wipe out the virus. It was deemed to be a completely hopeless task. But he kept going. There was a smallpox vaccine that was first developed in 1796, and it was under control in much of Europe and much of the Americas, but not in Asia and not in Africa. And he realized that mass vaccination was futile, that it wouldn't work. So how could it be done?
Well, what he did was he recruited 200,000 field workers in 50 countries. Now, this is an extraordinary story. I love this story. They were to act as spotters and vaccinators. He secured the cooperation of dozens of governments of all kinds. He also made sure that his field workers had lots of high-quality vaccines on their person. He set up new labs. He got the Russians involved, even in the midst of the Cold War. He did it in Afghanistan and Bangladesh and so on. By 1975, most of Africa and most of Asia were smallpox free. And in 1977, get this, the last naturally occurring case of smallpox was gone. Smallpox is the only human disease ever to have been eradicated. I think the thing that intrigues me about Henderson, though, as well, and this ties in with the tank, actually, strangely enough, what made Henderson mad towards the end of his life was, although smallpox had been eradicated naturally occurring, it hadn't been eradicated from Earth. Why?
Weapons.
People were keeping it in labs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not for anti-vaccine purposes and so on. It, as a weapon.
Yeah.
If you want a testimony, I mean, I guess all that we've been talking about today is a testimony both to the glory of humanity, where we can challenge these diseases and use the gifts that God has given us to help and aid people, but also the folly of humanity, that we can create chemical weapons, that we can create tanks, that we can create things which destroy. We'll leave you with that. Just think about the destruction that's been done through the destruction of marriage, through the creation of these kinds of weapons, and through the growing gap between rich and poor, as exemplified in our education system.
In an era of broken promises, then we hold on to God's promises.
Yes, absolutely. The gospel is the one promise that will never fail. See you next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get, they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand, because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it, or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens, trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness, and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky, or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.